Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV, and today I'm talking to George Mason University economist Peter Leeson, who's the author of the exciting new book, The Invisible Hook, The Hidden Economics of Pirates. Pete, thanks for coming.
Thank you.
What is The Invisible Hook?
The Invisible Hook is a play on Adam Smith's Invisible Hand, obviously. And the basic idea, of course, of Adam Smith's Invisible Hand, or the way that I like to view it in more general terms, is that self-interest guides social cooperation. And so the idea with The Invisible Hook is that self-interest was also guiding social cooperation among pirates.
Right. And so, I mean, to pick up on the Adam Smith line, it's not through the pirate's benevolence that he took your money. It was, how does that work?
Well, it's a little bit different. Okay. So, Adam Smith's invisible hand idea, obviously we've got individual self-interest generating true social benefits. Mm-hmm. With pirates, their individual self-interest is guiding social cooperation among themselves. So it's pirates self-organized not because, or used constitutional democracy, not because they were inherently democratic or inherently liked rules, but simply because it facilitated their profit-making purpose. Turns out that when pirates were able to better socially cooperate, it actually meant more plunder for innocent merchantmen.
So, I mean, in a way, what you're saying is that even pirates will self-regulate and will act in the common good when it makes sense for them to do so.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying, and we observe it, time and time again.
And in the actual pirate ships and whatnot, they had actual written constitutions or charters or codes. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's an amazing thing, actually. They had, sometimes very detailed written constitutions, which sometimes people call pirate codes. They regulated things like gambling, which could create, onboard fights. They regulated things like drinking, even smoking, any kind of, activities that might generate what economists call negative externalities.
So, smoking, it wasn't secondhand smoke, but it was blowing up the powder magazine and things
like that. Yeah, don't smoke in certain parts of the ship where you're liable to blow the crew to smithereens.
And, I mean, you even talk about how in, the captains on pirate ships, sailing in the 18th century, 19th century, it's usually shown as people constantly being keel-hauled and things like that. Captains on pirate ships actually had less control, right? Less dictatorial control than they did in regular merchant marines or navies.
Yeah, vastly less. Captains on merchant ships or in the Royal Navy were autocratic. Mm-hmm. They ruled more or less with an iron fist. Pirate captains, in contrast, were democratically elected, and crews could vote them out at any time, which caused them to be far less severe in their behavior. And pirates also created this other officer called the quartermaster, who was actually the more powerful officer on the pirate ship in non-conflict times.
And then in conflicts, if you went against the captain, you would be killed or marooned or severely punished.
That's right. Every organization, including pirates' organization, requires autocratic directive at some points in time. Mm-hmm. The thing is that what we want to do is to control that autocratic behavior such that it's limited to the cases in which we want it and get it out in the other times.
You talk about how pirates even developed workers' comp. How did that come about, and how did that differ from, say, their less barbaric, tyrannical colleagues, counterparts?
Right. So pirates, they had this workers' compensation system where if you, depending upon the appendage that you lost, let's say that most pirates are right-armed. So the right, arm, if you lose that in battle on a pirate ship, you would get a higher, social insurance payment, which came out of the common purse of the pirate crew. Same thing was true with if you lost a leg, lost an eye, and so on. Pirates evolved this, obviously, because piracy, was a very dangerous business. And certainly, conflict could cause you to, lose a leg. And so as a way to sort of encourage full effort on the part of pirates to make sure they gave it their all, they wanted to compensate you in some way so that if you got hurt, you would at least be willing to try.
And this was something that didn't carry over, though, to merchant marines or navy.
Well,
for the most part,
it happened earlier with pirates, pirates' compensation system was more generous. Eventually, pirate merchant ships typically, for example, did not have anything like this. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, there was state hospitals that were developed, to help out injured merchant sailors, but that came after.
Talk a little bit about how your work on pirates interacts with contemporary debates about economic policy and economic regulation in particular.
I think, one of the great lessons that I take away from the case of late 17th and early 18th century pirates is what I call the miracle of self-governance. Mm-hmm. And, it's not that pirates, although they did not have formal government, obviously, because they were outlaws, creating rules and regulations on their ships, it does not mean that they did not have rules and regulations, as their constitutions point to. They created these privately instead. And one of the great benefits of private rules and regulations is that they actually correspond to what people on the ground need. Imagine that.
Right.
Contrast that with when an outside agency, some external actor, creates rules. They can often be wildly at odds with what's actually needed on the ground. So when I think about things in terms of the current crisis, I tend to think about the benefits of self-regulation, which unfortunately we're moving away from at the moment, and the potential problems that can be caused by external regulation.
But now, won't most people say, look, you know, we're looking at Wall Street, which were like pirates, and they created their own rules. They played by their own rules at the behest. We were the people whose ships were being boarded, and we were the ones who surrendered our booty. So how does that analogy work?
Well, I think that the analogy breaks down in a couple of basic ways. One is that Wall Street actors are not pirates in the sense that they actually create wealth, whereas genuine pirates are just stealing from people. So that's a zero-sum game.
Right.
It's a different scenario. But the thing that they do have in common is that both are economic actors, which means they respond to the incentives that they face. Wall Street actors, banks, right, for instance, are simply responding and were responding to the incentives that they faced. When it became clear, for instance, when government increased the money supply, which drove down interest rates,
Right. That
caused people to take on additional loans, those people are just responding to incentives. And when banks made loans to a riskier class of individuals, they were also responding to political incentives that were created that encouraged them to do that. So pirates, at least, with their system of self-governance, it's not that things work perfectly, of course, with self-regulation, but you don't have the type of situation happening that we do with the current crisis where you have an external actor creating perverted incentives that individuals are responding to.
You've written recently about how it's a good thing that businesses fail. We are looking at massive failure in terms of General Motors, Chrysler, any number of financial institutions. What is good about that?
I mean, the key thing is to first recognize why is it that failing businesses in a market economy are failing. And the short answer is that they are using resources ineffectively. In order to free up resources, so that places that do use them effectively can channel them to the things that consumers actually want, we have to take them out of the places where they're being ineffectively used. So, and if a failing business goes under, it's actually something we should applaud because it means that resources that were being squandered by, you know, actor A can now be channeled to actor B who can put them to actual good use.
What is, we're looking at a global, coming out of the G20 meetings, we're looking at a global set of new regulations that will restrict what financial institutions can do from a top-down model, from an outside model that you were criticizing before. What would be a better solution than just saying what we need is 3, 4, 5, 6 more layers of outside regulation on the financial sector?
It's a difficult question to answer in a simple one, which is paradoxical. I think I'm going to stick with the simple one for my purpose is here. The basic idea is that I think each economy, if you will, each domestic actor, needs to look inward at the policies that it created to help encourage the problems that we've had. And that's the first place that we need to look. And we need to look not at increasing regulation, in my opinion, in those cases, but actually repealing regulation. Trying to, at a multinational level, add additional layers of regulation is not only unlikely, in my opinion, to solve the problem, precisely because it was regulation that caused part of the problem in many cases, but is likely to compound it, and furthermore, to stultify innovation globally, which is something that I'm very concerned about with the new regulatory regime that's being talked about. When you're talking, you know, for all the problems that our current financial system has had, it needs to be recognized that up until now, it generated, and even including this crisis, incredible amounts of wealth for the world. Even if we accept what, and I don't think we need to, but even if we accept what has happened as a sort of occasional inevitable failure, which again I think is a wrong way to look at, but even in that case, on net, we're still better off under the previous regime. So we threaten to remove the market's ability to generate that kind of wealth again if in fact we introduce these kinds of regulations that are being discussed now.
Okay. I want to thank Peter Leeson, the George Mason economist, who is the author of the new book, The Invisible Hook: The Hidden Economics of Pirates. Thanks, Pete.
Thank you.